Successful people learn how to make their mind work for them. I'm David Nagel, and this is the Successful Mind Podcast. It's David Nagel. I'd like to welcome you to the Successful Mind Podcast. Today, my guest is Abby Metcalf. Abby is a psychologist, author, and speaker who has helped thousands of people create happy, connected relationships. With her unique background in both business and counseling, she brings a fresh, effective perspective to relationships. With over 30 years of experience, Abby is recognized, she's a recognized authority and sought after speaker at organizations such as Google, AT&T, American Airlines, Kaiser, PG&E, Apple, and Chevron. Like, so she's been everywhere. She's been a featured expert on CBS and ABC News and has been a contributor to HuffPost, Women's Health, Your Tango, and Mount Diablo magazine. She's also the author of the Amazon number one best-selling book, Be Happily Married, Even If Your Partner Won't Do a Thing, which we absolutely have to get into that, and the host of the top-rated Relationships Made Easy podcast. Welcome, Abby.
Wow. I always feel like my mother wrote that, you know?
I know. It's weird, right? Like,
it is.
We have to have them, and then we sit there and listen to people read them for a living, and they're very interesting.
It's so funny, and I do want to share, since we're on the Successful Mind podcast, that I just booked a TED Talk for September. So
congratulations!
Thank you, and talk about envisioning that, and you know, I created a picture of myself doing a TED Talk. You know, I did something in Canva, and I put my logo in the back and in front of this huge crowd at TED. And I've had that in my, you know, the book where I write every morning, you know, my goals and what I'm doing. I've looked at that picture every day for a while, and I set it as a goal for Q3 for this year, and that's exactly when it's going to happen. So it was really cool.
You know, I have been not only doing that myself for a long period of time, but I think like the first time that I ever was introduced to practices like that was back like in 1993. Mm-hmm. And I am astounded still at the stories that I hear people using those tools in their life, mm-hmm. and actually having things that were very iffy if they would ever actually happen, especially from the place when they sat down and said, here's something that I would like to do, or here's something I would like to be or experience in my life. And they write it down and they do some visualization on it and stuff. And then they get it and it happens. I've had people do it with houses, partners, I mean, yeah. Money, you name it. All right. So I have to ask you a question because you and I met a couple of months ago in New York for the first time. We had a real fun evening and conversation together. Mm-hmm. And you were telling me a little about what you do. And I find the title of your book fascinating. So I just want to say what it is one more time. Happily Married, Even If Your Partner Won't Do a Thing. Now, I consider myself somewhat of an expert on marriage because I've done it twice. So that's the positive spin on it, right?
Yeah. There you go.
So tell me about this book and tell me about the title and where you're coming from with that idea. Like, how is a person happily married even if their partner won't do a thing?
Well, it's you know, it really. Well, here's what I found. Let me just say how I got there. I was working in with executives for many years. You and I talked about this. I did executive coaching in international mergers and acquisitions for many years. And I mostly work with people with drug and alcohol problems because I myself am a recovering drug addict. And, you know, it was sort of this kinship. And as you might imagine, executives who are, you know, getting caught with DUIs or, you know, doing blow in the at work or something else, they're not so happy at home. These are people who have awesome marriages and are really close to their children and just are brimming in life. That's not what's happening when you make those choices. So what was happening, because I had this background in counseling as well as these, you know, degrees in business, I didn't know better, but I was counseling them. You know, I was sort of, I didn't really understand the difference between counseling and coaching. And I would ask them about their marriages and their kids. And I would go into all this. And I started to really work with these, and it was mostly men. I started to really work with these men on them being different in their marriages. And lo and behold, these incredible, incredible transformations started to happen where their marriages started to really blossom and change and grow and transform. And eventually, as I started to really work with couples, I was... And I'm a nut. I keep Excel spreadsheets on everything. So like I track people's progress and how, you know, are they reaching their goals? I set goals with people in therapy, which hopefully anyone listening as a therapist, that you should be setting some goals so you're not there forever. And I noticed this amazing thing in that I was actually having better results when it was close. It was almost even, but a little better results when people came in alone to work on the relationship versus coming in with their partner. And I think it's because, you know, these years of doing this, I believe it's because where's the focus when you come in and say, I want to work on my relationship? It's on you. We can't sit here and talk about your partner. We can't, we're not going to spend our session with the two of you arguing about, you know, what happened last week. We're going to spend our time dissecting really what you're doing, how you're showing up. And really, that's what it comes down to. You know, we're taught this lie all these years, you know, my other half, my better half, you know, this 50-50 thing. And it's such BS. It's 100-100, right?
Yeah.
And the other person might not be putting in their 100, but you have to start with yours. And I call it relationship gridlock when, you know, couples are sitting there, right? They're both in their car. They're in some entangled, you know, argument. And everyone's in their car looking to their partner thinking, well, I can't do anything until you do it. I'm not going to say I love you till you apologize. I'm not going to do this until you do that, you know, and we're in that. And the other, but our partner's in their car doing the same thing, looking, sure, saying, well, you know, you have to change before I can change. And there's this idea that people have, and they stay stuck in this gridlock. And really, you got to back your frigging car up and go around the block. Like, enough. You know, you still get to your destination, but you're just not going to go the way you probably thought should happen or is right. So that's where that comes from.
That's fascinating. So I would suppose that when you're working with somebody, and you're at that place where you're talking about what they're doing, them owning their 100%, you've got somebody who's willing to stop blaming the other person and really look at themselves. So they want the relationship to work at some level. Would that be correct?
For sure. And I definitely, though, have had people come in who wanted a divorce. I'm thinking of this woman executive I worked with very specifically, who felt like they were going to get a divorce and they were trying to figure out the how. And I worked with her really 3 months, 4 months, and we completely turned that around. So, but I would say the majority, yes, they're kind of coming in with the mindset of, I want to do something. And I will say that one of the things I said to you when we met was, I use this acronym verb all the time with people, that if you're acting like a victim, or if your partner is, if you're acting entitled, or if your partner is, if you're trying to read minds, you know, he should know what I want for my birthday, or I'm not going to say anything because I know what she's going to say, right?
Yeah.
Or if you're in B, blame, so any of those, verb, if you're in any of those, it's like talking to a drunk person. Nothing is going to happen. Nothing is going to move in life in general, I would say, right? Not just in your relationship, but everywhere.
Right.
And sometimes people are all for, but I think what happens when you start to work on your relationship and take ownership like that, like even if your partner won't do a thing, you're getting out of the victim stance. You stop acting entitled, you know, I'm right, so they should. You get out of that. You stop, you know, thinking they can read your mind because they can't. And you get out of the blame game. And when you do that, things, life, the world, the universe, whatever you believe in, really starts to change and back you up.
Abby, do you think, I've always wondered this question. I've never had the opportunity to talk to somebody who's in the relationship field. I've never had the opportunity to ask them this question, but I've always really kind of wondered that whole idea of, I expect you to know what I'm thinking. Where does that come from? Like, that's got to start in our childhood, yes?
I think everything in some ways starts in our childhood. I think that, how do I say this well? You know, I just think that the paradigm as we're raised, I'm going to use the bigger one, is that things should be even. You know, everything should be fair. There's some like idea that things are fair. And I'll tell you this, my TED talk is The Real Reason Relationships Fail. And I can tell you that couples come in and they all pretty much say the same thing to me, or individuals. And they say, the problem in my relationship is communication. And people listening right now are thinking that. If I asked you the number one problem in your relationship, everyone would say, oh, we don't communicate. Number one, you can't not communicate. You're communicating all the time, just the wrong things. Okay. But that's not your problem. The number one problem in relationships is competition.
Really?
And that's the problem. Okay. This 50-50 idea. Here's my favorite. People come in and say, you know, he should pull his weight, right? She needs to understand, you know, we divide it up. And I have people always looking to their partner to be that person that picks up the slack, you know. And my favorite, you know, well, I had someone the other day, I need him to, you know, take some things off my plate. And I said, it's the same plate. Like, you've got it so wrong. When you take from your partner, you are taking from yourself. The two of you together are a shared battery. It is not your turn to put away the friggin' dishes. Are you kidding me? We take turns in games. If you're treating a relationship like a game, you are screwed. So it's not your turn.
That's brilliant. That is brilliant right there.
Makes me crazy. So, and think about that. So here I am, I'm exhausted. You know, two people in a relationship, and maybe there's kids, you know, and there's dogs and dog poop and bills and, you know, everything else, right? And I'm always looking to you to pick up the slack. Guess what? That other person is already exhausted. So now, and then I have, you know, men coming in complaining they're not getting blowjobs. I'm like, hire a cleaning lady, you might get a blowjob. Like, I don't know what to say to you. It you know, we get very caught up in, I call it correct or effective. And I say it to people all the time, you know, would you rather be correct or effective? Because you can't be both. So it's the old happy or right, just said a little better, I think.
Yeah.
You know, and so you can be correct that your man should pick his socks up off the floor, but is it effective to ask him every single day to do it? Well, obviously not, because you keep asking. So what are you doing? What are we doing here? And by the way, if this was a job and every day you went in and said, so-and-so is not doing their work, so-and-so is not doing their work, and you did nothing about it, you'd be fired.
Right.
Like, this is it. No one's going to keep you on. Yet we go into our relationships like that all the time, thinking, right, with this mindset. And that's why they fail.
Okay. So, all right, so that makes a lot of sense. I had, years ago when I worked with my mentor, he didn't, like, specialize in relationships or anything, but you know, when you're working with people in various areas of their life, it has a tendency to come up. And I would remember him tell people, he would be like, has it always been this way? And they would think for a second. He'd be like, no, really think, has it always been this way? And they would go, well, no. And he said, well, how come that is? Or why is that? And they wouldn't know how to answer him. And he said, you know, when you fell in love, you didn't focus on any of the things about your partner you didn't like. You only focused on the things that you did like, or the things that turned you on, or the things that amazed you about that person. He said, and as time goes on, you start focusing on all the things that you don't like. He said, yeah. It's very simple. Just go back and start focusing on the things that you like. And I remember when I first heard him say that, I was thinking to myself, because I remember my parents got divorced, and it was a painful time when I was a kid. And I thought to myself, that answer seems irresponsibly simplistic to me.
Yeah.
What do you think about that? Like, is it really that simple? Or is it, I mean, obviously, if we're in a relationship, we get married, we start having kids, life starts to unfold in a more complex way. We have more responsibilities. we start to find different parts of ourselves that we may not have known were there, and we have to learn how to deal with those things and grow up and mature and all of that. But do you think that there's some reality in what he said as far as because he also indicates an interesting issue that we're not really evaluating the totality of the person, or like what are the values of this relationship before we're even getting involved in it? He used to say, you jump into bed, you have 15 minutes of great sex, and next thing you want to do is get married because you think you're in love.
That's pretty true, actually.
I know.
Well, and I'll tell you, when I do meet with couples, one of the first things I do is I ask them for their goals. You know, like, how will you know this was successful? And number one, they'll tell me they've been to 15 other therapists and no one ever asked, what's your goal? So that's a little scary. But number two, they'll say, I don't know. Like, they're not, or their goal is in the negative. You know, I want her to nag me less. And I'm like, so she can still nag you, just not as much? How will she know? You know, like, what are we talking about? Like, there's a way that people, you're right, before they get married, they don't really talk about what are the bigger goals of us as a couple. You know, what's our mission? You know, our mission statement as a couple.
Yeah.
Like, where are we going? What are we doing? And so I think that we sort of get into things not really clear, you know, and of where we're going. But I'll say that it does happen that we, you know, because you know this, our brains have this negativity bias. So we go towards this negative, right? We start to get dragged into that. And, you know, there's the famous 3-to-1 ratio that Barbara Fredrickson talks about and has studied, you know, where for every 3 positive things that happen in your world, for every 1 negative, it cancels it out. And John Gottman, a famous marriage researcher, his research shows that in love relationships, that ratio is 5-to-1.
Really?
Is that crazy? It's so skewed. So for every 5 positive things your partner does, for that 1 negative, it cancels it out. And so we're always sort of looking for that. And I think that's true kind of our whole lives in a lot of ways, you know, depending on how you're raised or, you know, if you had really optimistic parents, God bless, but a lot of us, at least in my age group, don't.
Right.
And and parents were a little, you know, more negative, and, you know, mine came here from another country, and, you know, there's just this different energy about it all. So, but to get back, I think that it's really about what you focus on day to day that makes the difference. And I talk a lot about setting intention with my clients, because I'll tell you what happens more often than not, which is I'll give someone a great tool like this, like, okay, I want you to start setting intention. I want you to start before you interact with your partner, you know, before you walk in your home, I want you to really have an intention of how you want to be when you walk in your home. You know, I want to be fun. I want to be patient. I want to be gentle, compassionate, loving, sexy, whatever you want to be. And so I'll tell them to do that, and they'll sort of bring this different energy home. But their mindset is beliefs like, it's going to take a really long time to change the relationship. I can't really change this relationship if my partner refuses to change. It's been this, we've made changes before, but they don't stick, right? This probably sounds familiar to people. And if that's really what your mindset is, even as you bring in this new tool, your partner picks up on that. They're picking up, you know, our conscious brains processes information at a rate of 50 bits per second, and our subconscious brains process information at a rate of 11 million bits per second. That's some work of Christine Carter. So when you think of that, your partner is sitting there going, yeah, she's acting nicer, but how long is this going to last?
Yeah.
So they sort of hold back. And then here I am with my great intention, doing all these things Abby told me to do, but my partner's not giving me the response I'm expecting that I think I should be getting, right? So I'm like, oh, this doesn't work. And then I stop. And then, of course, my partner goes, yeah, see, I knew that wasn't going to last long. And then they come back in the office and go, Abby, that didn't work. And so I have to often start with these beliefs about what you think is going to happen as you move into the relationship, as you do this work. And again, that's why you can be successfully married even if your partner doesn't do a thing, because we all know the difference. Like we've all walked down a street and had somebody walking towards us and we thought, ooh, that person's sketch. And we've, you know, if you're a woman, you hold your bag a little tighter, you know, maybe across the street. They didn't say anything to us. They didn't even look up. But you could feel, this is that subconscious brain picking up on this energy this person's putting off. Well, if you go home every day, and what I want is everyone to walk in their front door, close that door, and exhale. And go, oh, yes, I made it. I'm here. This is the best place in the world. This is my harmony place. This is my good place. But a lot of people, I had a guy in the office the other day, he goes, well, yeah, you know, I was setting intention, Abby, and I was, you know, preparing myself for battle. And I was like, what? Before he walks in the house. They have four kids and the what, you know. And I'm like, preparing for battle? No wonder. Like, oh my Lord. You know, of course your life kind of sucks when you get home. If that's the energy you're bringing in. So there's so much to, and it's really what you teach, you know. There's so much to this idea of this successful mind in different ways. And it's true in relationships as it is in business. There has to be a place where you're aligned. You have to be aligned.
So if you were sitting with a couple, because like in business or in, if somebody is, let's see, I'm trying to think. Basically if they're starting anything, and this would include a relationship, so this is where the question's going. I would ask them the question, why do you want to do that? Because people come to me all the time with these really great ideas, and some of them are good and some of them are not so good, but it really doesn't matter. I'll just ask them the question, why do you want to do that? Like, I want to see where are they in their thinking? Are they thinking practically about what they want to do? Are they really considering the responsibilities that they're creating? Have they developed the discipline and the self-trust to be able to follow through even when things get tough with things? And, or are they coming from a place of magical thinking? And I remember when we were sitting down in New York talking, you asked me if I was going to get married again. And I said to you, I really don't know. I'm not, I am 3 years this year out of a marriage. But prior to that, I was basically married for 30 years straight with a very short period in between two marriages, and raised four children, and they're all grown and healthy and productive. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, I'm 53. If I was to get, why do I want to do that? And I don't feel like I personally have come to an answer that. It's not that I don't want to be with somebody or don't want to be in relationship again with somebody, because there's a lot of things that are really great about that. But what is a healthy answer to the question of why do you want to be married? Mm-hmm. In just your opinion.
That's awesome. I ask that question quite a bit to folks, and I'll say to them, you know, why are you in this marriage? Like, what is it? What's the goal? To me, it's to have, if you can have someone who, and you can have this in a long-term relationship or in marriage, it depends on who you are, but who's your biggest yes? That's that person who's your biggest yes, who's going to have your back no matter what, who's going to really be there when the chips are, when they're going good and when they're not. It's interesting. A lot of couples do well when things are bad, but not when things are good. So, you know, some couples are, I had this not long ago. Oh, you know, the husband had a promotion and was going to be traveling to Europe a lot. And her reaction was, well, that's great. I guess I'll be home taking care of the kids while you're in Europe. And so that's not a happy response, right? That's not having your back. That's not a big yes. So, but having, when we have a huge yes in our lives, it's that place where when we falter, because I'm sure maybe you have this too. I do. Even though I've been doing this stuff, you know, I started with Anthony Robbins in 1985, and I've been on this quest a really long time. Yeah. Because I'm also 53. I'm almost 54, and I still doubt myself sometimes. I still go, you know, I'll have a goal and then go, oh, can I? I don't know. And it's so amazing to look to my partner and have that person say to me, oh, you totally got this. Oh no, don't you remember? You did this and now it's going to be this and you're there and I can't wait. And oh, I can see it already. I'm in the audience watching you do your TED talk. That's to me, when that's really there, and having that place where you can be completely vulnerable, where you know, really show your fear, really show your sadness, really show who you are in the world. Anything that might feel embarrassing or even humiliating or whatever, that there's this place, you know, that you'll be not just unconditionally loved, because that's fine, but the real meat is to be unconditionally accepted. Yeah. A lot of us have been unconditionally loved in our lives, but if we didn't feel accepted, we didn't feel the love. And people miss this a lot. We have to feel unconditionally accepted. It doesn't mean that we don't want to move and change and grow, but we want to be accepted for who we are as people. You know, like I have all this energy, which I'm sure you noticed when you met me in the evening, right? And I was like on jet lag and everything else. I'm like this all the time. Like, this is my energy in the world. But as you can imagine, it's sometimes a little annoying to be around, you know, like this is how I am. And I don't want someone with me despite that. I want someone with me who, because of that, like embracing that part of me, like you know, you get the good when my energy's great and it's fun and everybody loves it. But it also has to be when my energy's high and you're not in that mood, that you still meet me there.
Right.
And that's, to me, why to be married.
That makes sense. I really don't think that a lot of people really consider, like, if you want to have a successful marriage, the amount of work that it takes to put into it to make sure that happens. Just like any other area of your life, you know.
Yeah.
If you have the vision, where are we going as a couple? What are we going to do? How do we support each other? I loved your analogy that it's not a game. That really brings a lot of awareness and clarity to that problem when they're competing against each other. I think that's absolutely fascinating.
Yep. Oh, I'm so glad you like it. To me, when I explain this to people, every single time there's this quiet for a moment, and then there's, oh yeah, you know, and this is why you're not communicating. It's because you're competing on this subtle level. And when we compete, think about that. Someone has to win and someone has to lose.
Right.
So if I'm always thinking I'm going to lose if you win in my relationship, then, right, that's a problem.
That's a big problem.
Yeah. And I think especially when we have children or as our lives build, when you're first dating someone, the stuff's a lot easier. But as you build a life together and you're both working and, you know, or one's working, one's not, or you have kids, or, you know, you get more complex. That's when the competition really shows up. That's when that, you know, well, I clean this, so why aren't you cleaning that? Or you're home all day. Why do I have to have a cleaning lady also? I'm working. You know, like there's this idea, you know, of, again, this like pulling your weight, whatever that means. And different people have different capacities for what they can and can't do. And it's not taking into account equity versus like equality. You know, if you're just always like hour to hour, you're screwed. Because
right.
A lot of things that men do, for example, that might not take as many hours as something I do, but it has incredible value to me. And that's, again, that idea of really focusing on what does work and what you love and what you're grateful for, because those are the things that are so valuable. And, you know, and then it doesn't matter to pick up the friggin' socks from the floor. You do it. You love this person. And, oh, I can do, when I put away the dishes, I think, oh, it's one less thing for my partner to do. Isn't that great? Isn't this like a nice thing to do so that he has one less thing when he gets home?
Yeah. Yeah. Right? I totally hear what you're saying. It makes me wonder if the goal doesn't change from when we're dating to when we're actually in a committed relationship, because when we're dating, we're looking to gain some type of approval. I mean, especially if we want the relationship to be a long-term relationship, I wonder if our mind is not in a competitive mode when we're dating and then that switches after we get married.
Oh, it's interesting. No, I actually think it is a little in the competitive when we're dating too. I think it's just different. We want to be seen as a winner, right? So, I think that, you know, so the man might be treating for, you know, I'm going, you know, with the stereotypes here, but let's say the man is treating for a really great dinner and really, you know, right, given his all, because he's sort of subtly competing for this part, like, I want to be the number one, right?
Right. True.
So, and I want you, and then I'm looking to see what you're going to give me, like what's coming back.
Yeah, what's the prize?
Yes. There's still, and maybe that's sex, maybe that's just another date, maybe that's whatever, but there's still that little bit of a tit for tat going on, right?
Yeah.
And I'll tell you something, I'll give you a little hint into this, but I had a gentleman in here not that long ago, and he was complaining to me about his wife, and he said, you know, Abby, I do all this stuff and I don't get sex. A lot of times men are complaining they don't get sex. And I do this, I do that. He's listing them. She needs to understand it's tit for tat, it's tit for tat. You know, like I do something, she has to show up too. And I stopped him and I said, it's tat for tit. You need to like stop the presses and put things in a different order. And I swear, it's so great. He stopped in his tracks and he looked at me and he said, he goes, I've been going to therapy a long time, Abby. That's the best thing I ever heard. He was like, because he got it. I was like, yeah, get out of that keeping score. Yeah, I do this, you do this. You just have to keep putting up and being in a certain way, and you will see that things come to you. Just like I said about my TED talk earlier, you know,
right.
It's that same way in our relationships in so many ways that as we put that out and wholly believe and fully put our feelings and our emotions and our flow and our state into something, that's when we receive.
That's amazing. All right. So last question.
Yeah.
I always ask our guests if they would, based on, I mean, you got 30 years of experience here, right? So this is not to put the pressure on or anything, but if you could leave our listeners with one successful mind tip, what would it be?
Oh, yeah. And here's an easy one to remember. I always have these little therapeutic jingles. This one is don't sack your relationship. And sack is S-A-C. Don't make suggestions. Don't offer advice. And don't criticize.
Love
so
it.
No matter what conversation you're in, don't do those three things. And instead, ask questions. How can I help you with that? If there was one thing I could do right now that would move the needle on this, what would it be? What else have you tried? Whatever, right? When we ask questions, that's where you're inviting the conversation. You're connecting to your partner. You're connecting to the other person. When you make suggestions, offer advice, or criticize, none of that happens. It's disconnecting.
Gotcha. That makes so much sense. That's beautiful. That is
cool.
Absolutely fantastic. Hey, it's been great having you on. And I am going to, you know, it's another thing that's really interesting was because I was gone all week, I just got your book when I got back. So I was trying to go through it as much as I could. And one of the things that I highlighted was that little bit of information that you put down about 11 million bits per second, and then versus 50 versus the 11.
Yeah.
And I thought that is absolutely fascinating when you consider the ramifications of those two things, because they're not always working in harmony with each other.
Nope.
And when they're not, you've got a big problem on your hands.
It's really true. And you can get them to work in harmony, and that as long as you understand it. And again, you start doing these things like not sacking, asking questions, setting intention. Those are the things that will get those two aligned.
For sure. Awesome. Where can people find out more about you?
They can go on over to my website. It's abbymedcalf.com. I'm sure you'll link to it in your show notes or something fabulous.
Yep.
There's a free communication toolkit for couples. So there are some communication because people like that word, but know that I'm going after the competition. there's that on there, but you know, you can get to my podcast and all my other stuff through the website.
Awesome. Abby, thank you again so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, I got a ton out of this. I know everybody else will. And I really appreciate you coming on the show. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
All right. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to the Successful Mind Podcast. And if you like what you heard and you want to know more, go to davidnagel.com/freestuff.